Mammoth
This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And while you're there, you can find out about Deceptology, the neuroscience of deception and scams, my upcoming show at the Melbourne Magic Festival. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you there. Now, on with the show. Kevin Turner and Ben McKenzie just want to play games. As two members of the pop-up playground team, they spend their days creating highly interactive, immersive game experiences. So why has their latest project, Small Time Criminals, attracted the ire of both tabloid media and victims of crime support groups? Have they created a bank heist simulation so realistic that it trains would-be criminals how to commit robberies while simultaneously abusing the victims of violent crime? Or is the whole thing just a media beat-up? Spoiler alert, it's the second one. On this week's episode, Kevin and Ben talk games, cheating, bank heists and media manipulation. It's all fun and games until somebody loses a sense of perspective. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. So, you guys are not criminals. You're neither small or timey. You're just two guys who have, along with several other people, have created a crime experience. What do you like to call it?
In terms of that its name is Small Time Criminals, or yes, that it's a yeah. virtual bank heist experience? Not a virtual. It's the exact opposite of a virtual bank heist experience. It's a physical, fictional representation of a bank heist.
An immersive, live bank heist role play experience. These are all words. Yeah. They're all words. Uh-huh. It's a game.
It's a game, yeah. So basically, we get to pretend to rob a bank, and we have we're put into what feels like a real bank.
It was a real bank.
So we're put into a real bank.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. We've you know, extensively, well, not modified it, but what have we done to it? We've set dressed it.
Uh-huh. We've set dressed it and put in the kind of paths that wouldn't exist in a real bank that lead you directly to getting into all the bank's things.
Yeah.
And so, and throughout the time you are in this bank, you can steal various different objects from different places around the bank?
Yeah, so things like antiques or jewelry. There's a bit of cash in there and some weirder stuff. Don't want to... No spoilers.
Okay. And you have a certain amount of time to do it and to escape.
A very kind of strict 60 minutes kind of thing that really adds a level of pressure and stakes to what the players have to do. So it is very important that they follow their time limit. Or there are ramifications. Although no one's come out late yet.
No.
People have gotten caught, but no one's come out late.
So you can get caught. Security guards, police, the whole
thing.
Well,
there's security guard patrolling the building. Mm-hmm. And part of the game is avoiding the security guard. And that's consistently one of the things that players say they love the most. And I think it's just because adults don't get given an excuse to play hide and seek very often, particularly if they don't have kids.
It's the sort of thing people would do, like, say, you know, going to do paintball or going to do a puzzle room or going to do any sort of kind of interactive experience. You kind of go as it's a team building exercise. It's a fun thing to do with a group of people that can... You kind of left your own devices to a certain extent.
Yeah, definitely. It is definitely designed as a way to... Games, more than anything, in terms of what we make a lot of the time, are about teaching people to work together in a way they wouldn't usually expect to, particularly in an environment in which they wouldn't. Most teams that we have going through, I hope, aren't actively planning a bank heist.
Just this is a dry run
for
them.
I don't think we've had any real burglars, no.
And I think you said the other day, Ben, that anyone who does try to take the skills they learned from Small Time Criminals into an actual bank heist will very quickly find themselves in jail.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we don't teach them anything, like we don't teach them how to pick locks or to crack a safe, but we have experiences that are a bit like those things. So you get to, you know, it's more about finding how you open something without needing criminal skills. And that's about following clues and deciphering, you know, stuff in the back.
In the last sort of several weeks, I guess, since you have put this together, you have had accusations that you're teaching people how to rob banks, that you're being insensitive to the victims of crime, that you are terrible people doing terrible things to the detriment of society. You've been in the newspaper,
talkback radio have been talking about you. Sleazy tabloid television shows have been knocking on your door.
Which will remain unnamed.
A name unnamed for Australians. It's a current affair. For Americans, imagine like 60 minutes younger inbred cousin.
Or just imagine the episode of The Simpsons where Homer is accused of sexually assaulting the babysitter. Because yes. That's what they do.
Yeah, great. Excellent. That's it. Brilliant. Before, however, we get to all of that that has happened, can we talk a bit about you guys and what you do? So this is a creation of Pop-Up Playground. What is Pop-Up Playground?
Ben is probably the most qualified to answer that, as he's one of the three founding members. But the really basic summary is we make awesome experiences which take the form of live street games for adults.
Yeah, so we make experiences which are about play and which are mostly take the form of games, but not always. And we've got to focus on play for adults, because when you grow up, you're sort of taught that, you know, play is a thing for children, and that you should stop doing things just for fun. And, you know, we think that actually play is very good for you. And we were inspired when we started the company, and I should say Rob and Sarah really started the company, along with Paul Callahan, who used to also be the director of the Free Play Independent Games Festival, who's now moved over to the UK. And it's no longer part of our company, but he's a great guy. And they brought me in because they thought, Ben knows about games, let's get him in. But the whole point of it was inspired kind of by a lot of the playful stuff that was happening around the time. So there's a company called Kony in the UK who do playful secret agent stuff, where they give you a code name and they send you on little secret missions. And they do lots of other stuff as well, but that's sort of one of the inspirations. And also inspired by the new games movement, which is from the 1970s in America, where these guys were like, let's just do fun stuff. And they would like invent games that involve giant balls and, you know, crazy rules. And they'd drive around in a van doing cool stuff. And they were invited by the Victorian state government to come out and create what became the Life Be In It program.
Oh, so this is like parachute games and the giant earth balls and all
definitely
that kind
of stuff. The roots of everything we do goes all the way back to that stuff as well. And even further back to the parlor games that people used to play before anything, games like Werewolf and Mafia and charades and all the kind of stuff that how people definitely used to entertain themselves anytime they were together in a group. We're trying to start that happening again.
Yeah. And so it's about, you know, it's about social interaction. It's also a certain amount about physical interaction, so giving you an excuse to get out and do physical stuff. But also just, you know, play is, it's good for your brain. It's good for your brain and your body.
The all the things you've mentioned, so the, you know, interactive, the earth ball games and games like Werewolf and Mafia, which I guess can best be described as one person is the bad guy, everyone else is the good guy, and you have to try and figure out who is the bad guy.
It's a social deduction game.
Social deduction. Love it. Yes. That has those games, the popularity of those games comes from the interaction that you have with people. Like board games that were popular when I was growing up, and you guys as well, were never really about the interaction. They were always about moving your counter around the board, and it was about, you know, you'd have to say Monopoly would be the most interactive it ever really got. Whereas a game like Werewolf, you've got that deception and that lying and that cheating, and it, you know, often descends into name calling and hatred and beating each other up over tiny
wild accusations that make absolutely that person has a beard. They're a werewolf.
Yeah, that's right. And the person who won't take the game seriously, or the person who takes the game too seriously. Is that something that you guys are thinking about carefully with your games? Is that level of interaction? You want it to be about how the people are interacting with each other so much as, you know, less so with how they're interacting, I guess, with the game itself?
I think it's really interesting that you bring up the board games, because I agree that particularly 20 years ago in the Snakes and Ladders, Monopoly, Mousetrap kind of era of board games, games were exactly what you described, game of life as well. I distinctly remember of moving your counter around and just kind of playing the mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
But they're definitely, I don't know if board games ever went away, but are certainly in a resurgence at the moment, but with more of a bent towards games that encourage much more interaction, much more back and forth between their players. And since I started all this stuff with board games as well, but then moved on to role-playing games and then kind of moved back from role-playing games to pop-up stuff. Pop-up seems to run that middle ground between moving your counter around and playing a character in a game. You can play most of the games that we create, you can play as yourself.
Yeah.
Which is a barrier for entry that's really important.
Yeah, that's a really conscious decision that we don't put a lot of role into the role-playing. So it's not... I generally don't describe our games as role-playing games because we don't ask you to play a different character or to put on a character or behave except like yourself. But what we do is we allow you to put yourself into a situation that you would not normally be in. And we let that situation... And the fact that you're playing with other people who are in the same situation, from that, naturally, you get that social interaction arising. And that's true whether it's a competitive game, like some of the things we've run, or whether it's a team game, or whether it's an entirely collaborative game. So in Small Time Criminals, you play with a bunch of probably friends, occasionally strangers, and you have to all work together. You're all on the same team. So that fosters very much that kind of social interaction.
And I think you can't dismiss... the fact that most of the pop-up crew, we all come from a theater background. We all are really heavily focused on and talk a lot about the ways that games can create narrative. I know personally that one of the things I love most about a game, say like Werewolf, as a growing example, and Small Town does the same thing very much so, isn't when people are playing the game, it's when afterwards people tell the story of what they did in the game. Games let players accidentally write stories without them even knowing that they're doing it, just by us giving them a framework in which to exist and do kind of what they want to do inside of that framework. And then they go, oh yeah, but then there was the time that you thought I was a werewolf, but then I convinced you otherwise, and then you're not anymore. And that's kind of where that social interaction becomes... the word art.
Okay, we're around 10 minutes in, and he said the A word right there. Art.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it hurt to say it.
Yeah, I could feel the pain. I could feel it. So, what are some of the other games that that Pop-Up Playground have created, just to give people an idea of where you're coming from?
Yeah, well, we've done a lot of stuff. Most of our stuff has been quite short-term, kind of like a theatre season, and often in a specific place. But, for example, we made a game called True Romans All, which was with the Bell Shakespeare Mind's Eye program, and it was based on Julius Caesar, but it was kind of like a giant choose-your-own-adventure game, except that you had an audience instead of a single reader, and the audience could split up into two groups, and both of those groups made decisions. And so we had to keep an eye on what they were doing through the game.
The groups being the Julius Caesar camp and the Brutus camp.
Yeah, the conspiracy.
They kind of went back and forth.
Yeah, and so at the end of the game, depending on what the players have done, they would get either the ending from the play or one of about six or seven other endings that we ended up working out. That was like a on the streets, following actors around, them doing bits of Shakespeare that Rob, as our head writer, kind of mashed up and changed a bit.
So players performing certain actions, such as gaining petition signatures to kind of support Julius Caesar, and depending how many they got from the people of Federation Square, who were just general members of the public, would again dictate how the support for Caesar was going in the end goal as well. So that kind of marrying of promenade theatre with actual gameplay systems that let them do things.
Yeah. So that was a bigger one that we did.
Is there a danger with that of... So when you experience Shakespeare, you watch a play and it unfolds as Shakespeare intended, or as the director intended, and you can take what you want from it, but the story is told in that way. But the moment you add in any sort of interactivity, you then change the story. So as you said, you know, like his support gets more or less signatures, and if people don't take it seriously or they take it too seriously, that also sort of changes the story and then affects its outcome. And that can be positive, but it can also, you can then also just end up with a crappy story and people go, oh, Shakespeare's kind of boring because I can't get signatures. Is that something you have to take into account with that kind of story?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You with any kind of system, particularly like True Romans All is a good example of this because it happened. You end up occasionally, very, very rarely, you end up with griefers. And you, like with any game, you get it in online gaming and you get it here as well. You get people who turn up with the mindset of, I'm going to break this game, which obviously has a negative ramification for the other players as well.
Yeah.
But as long as you acknowledge that that might happen, you can put systems in place to plan for that. In the example of True Romans All, Each path had like a, what was the word we used? It was the person, the person the people had elected as their representative was one of the game runners. I can't remember what the Roman name for it was.
Oh, yeah, no, I can't remember off the top of my head.
But it was essentially their voice in parliament. So any action the players were about to take went to a democratic vote because Romans love democracy. Stereotypical statement. But it basically came down to them. So if there was one person who was kind of acting the maggot, to use one of my dad's phrases, then they would be able to kind of use the power of... Everyone else would get kind of tired of that person, and that person would kind of get shunted out a little bit. And if they wanted to interact, they had to play the game. If you don't play the game, usually in these scenarios, you probably won't enjoy yourself. But most of the time, people seem to realize that if it's a long-form thing, people will realize at some point that if they want to actually be there and interact with it, they have to play the game.
Yeah.
Rule systems exist for that reason.
And can you cheat? I mean, can I just write a bunch of signatures on the piece of paper myself and no one will know that they weren't real names?
Well, you know, yes, you can try. And I mean, look, that's part of games too. I mean, it's one of the things that makes real world games different to video games. So in video games, unless you have the skill to alter a computer program, you have to play by the rules as given to you by the computer game. Like you can't change it. Whereas in real world games, almost like even in something like Monopoly, almost nobody plays Monopoly by the rules as written. Everybody plays because nobody learns by reading the rules. Everyone learns by being taught by their parents how to play Monopoly. So they're all playing with these house rules, which are actually awful house rules because they don't make the game better. They just make it last longer. That's my opinion. I have a lot of opinions about Monopoly.
But we could fill a whole hour with the flaws of Monopoly.
I know. We would get angry. But yeah, and in the same way, you know, any game we make, people can bend the rules, but you want to design the game and think about that in such a way that you can compensate for people bending those rules or allow for it. I mean, you know, in small-time criminals, I think there's probably ways to get around some of the things that we've designed, but that's kind of like, then you're sort of like, well, these players are really clever, so okay. Well, they do something you don't expect, and then you just have to react to it. And that's, again, the benefit of having a real-world game that's run by human brains rather than a computer game is that we don't have to put in a pre-programmed set of possible outcomes. We can react to anything that happens.
There is a great example of that in Small Town that isn't a spoiler, actually, which is that in one of the very first days of us opening, a player group came out with, they couldn't find out how to get into a safe, but worked out that they actually physically were able to pick up the safe. So they brought us out a locked safe.
Yeah, so we decided, well, we've now got a rule for that. If people bring us out a locked safe, we know what we do. Which I want to kind of spoil it. We can account for that. Whereas, you know, if we'd written this, if this was a video game and you tried to do that, either you wouldn't be able to do it because the game is not set up to allow it, or you would do it, but you wouldn't get any points or anything for it.
Or the game would crash.
Yeah, or the game would crash. Yeah exactly.
There is, I guess, also that idea with your games that it is more about the experience than it is about the winning or losing. And I know that's a cliche of, like most of the time when someone goes, oh, no, it's not about whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game.
No, it's about winning.
But it's about winning. Like 99% of the time, it's about winning. Like if I win the game and I'm a jerk the whole time and you all have a miserable time because of me, it doesn't matter because I won the game.
Yeah.
But it does sound like with these games that winning is great. But it reminds me, I mean, like there's cooperative games, which are like a Pandemic is the one where everyone is working together towards one goal. And the only way you're really going to achieve that goal is if you follow the rules, and you can break the rules, but then what's the point of playing the game? Because no one's really going to win. And it sounds similar to experience to what you're doing in that, yeah, you can get a high score, but, or you can, you know, get a lot of loot, but you know, if you're not really entering into the spirit of the game, you're not really getting its true value.
Well, the players' reactions so far, we give them their score, they get really excited about their score, but then within 5 minutes they're no longer talking about their score. They're talking about hiding from the guard or the different safes that they got into or what they found in that one drawer that one time. So it is, funnily enough, I'm very competitive in games. I love to win games, but when designing the games, we made it a score-based system, and then almost immediately we're like, cool, that's the end goal. That can sit over there now. Let's actually just make an interesting experience for people to have that happens to end in a score.
Yeah. I actually think that primarily the main purpose of the score is it gives us a means to say to people, so you found a certain amount of what's in here, but not all of it. And they're like, oh, yeah, right, yeah. Because we tell someone, you know, oh, you scored $1.2 million. And they're like, great. And then we said, but, you know, we've had a few teams score $3 million. And they're like, oh, we could get $3 million. We'll come back and do it again.
And try again, yeah.
You know, and really that's the point of the score is to let people know that, yes, there is more for you to find. And most people are aware of that anyway. Yeah. But Small Time Criminals is like that. Small Time Criminals is a collaborative game. But we've made competitive games. Like, a lot of our smaller games are competitive. And sometimes they're competitive in a very gentle way. Like, one of my favorite games that we run is called Little Monsters Big Day Out, where we give you a little toy plush monster and we tell you that they're on a break and they want to go on adventures. And they come with a little speech balloon that says, I want to see something really old. And you have to put on a big monster tail so that the little monster will trust you because they're afraid of human beings. And you have to go out and take a little picture of the monster with something that satisfies the adventure they want to go on, and then bring it back and show us. We give you another one. And you've got to go on as many adventures as possible in 5 minutes. And it's a really simple little game. It's a great one to play with kids, but also adults have a ball because they get to pretend they're a monster and run around taking stupid photos. It's great. But and it is competitive because the person who takes the most photos wins. But nobody really cares about that. They care about the fact that they've got this cute little monster and they've got to pretend to take it on an adventure and take a photo of it. And then we have other games that are really seriously competitive, like Gong, which is this sort of team game that we made, which is kind of like hockey or a very small version of soccer, but with beanbags instead of a single ball.
And the rules constantly change.
And the rules change. You have cards that you can play to change the rules. So, you know, you might play a card and suddenly all the players have to hop on one leg while they're carrying a beanbag, or you have to throw the beanbag into your goal from like 2 meters away instead of dropping it in, and stuff like that. And people get super competitive in that. Like, they really want to win.
I think the ongoing thing of the whole thing is that while the majority of our games have an end goal of score or competitive or winning, the majority of our games also don't have any prizes. You're not playing for anything other than the fun of having played. There's never really a games.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So the question, like, this, because this is a podcast about deception and scams and taking people's money, and so you're all this talk of everyone's a winner, like, it's not about winning and losing. You even dropped the word socialism in there earlier. The first thing that I notice is that you've made it very, very clear in your scenario that the bank you're robbing deserves it. Was that important to you, like, that the bank deserved it? That, well, you weren't taking money from nanas, you're taking money from an evil bank.
I know when it was first pitched to me by Rob, the first thing I said was, I don't think this, but are people going to ask us if we're promoting crime? Which I'm really glad I said, because it is the resounding question we've received since we've opened.
Well, I've got to interject there. It is not a resounding question.
No, it's a question that...
it's something it's that the one, loudest question.
It's something that one journalist... That's a better... One journalist provoked someone to say, I think, is probably more accurate. But never mind.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's been a loud question. But it was good because it meant that we immediately thought about it and were like, well, what if the bank are really terrible people it made it a Robin Hood situation.
Well, I think
which everyone likes.
I don't think there was really any chance that we weren't going to do that, because, you know, you don't. I mean, you don't watch Ocean's 11 because you want to see somebody get ripped off. You watch Ocean's 11 because the guy who owns the casinos is a dick, and you want someone to take his money because also he's making money off gambling, and there's a very real. I think a lot of people feel that's not okay, you know, and he's made all his money from people losing their money in his casinos. And he's a dick personally to people, and he's ruthless. And I don't know, I can't remember if in the first film they ever sort of insinuate that he's also criminal in any way. I don't think they do, actually.
They don't. I watched it recently.
But you know, you don't feel bad about him getting his money taken. Also because he's less charismatic than all of the robbers, you know, which is a big part of it too.
That's something, I mean, that, because it's something we mentioned, we had an episode about The Sting, and The Sting was one of the first con artist movies to say, here, you know, the victim deserves it. and the sucker deserves it, and therefore that makes it okay for us to be on the side of the criminals. And so here, because you want them to be on the side of the criminals, you want to, you don't want to muddy, you want to make it fun for people. Mm. Although, okay, you could add in an extra element of you know, like it is now in computer games, of giving people a moral and ethical choice, where as they're going through, they're realizing, well, hang on, I can take this, but it belongs to a little old lady, and it's, you know, like this belongs, this money belongs to a charity, this sort of stuff.
It's very funny because that's one of the first things, I think, in one of our opening design meetings for the game that Ben and I talked about, was that quandary. And we did it in playtesting for this game, and still definitely have it in our heads, but found in the playtest of it that it did muddy the waters a little bit, because at the moment it's very clear that they're taking from someone despicable, and if they're aiming for their score, and then you say to them, oh, but little old Miss Johnson had this necklace, and it was hers from three generations past, and they took it from her, do you want us to get it back to her? A lot of players think to themselves, is that going to affect my score, even if it makes them a quote unquote better person, because they're taking the higher moral ground. And what it made people feel was that suddenly it went from them doing the right thing because they're stealing from the corrupt banking officials, to if they didn't make the choice to give little old Miss Johnson back her necklace, they were doing the wrong thing. And immediately when we posited the question to the players at the playtest, the wall went up so quickly between them and us, because they were so suddenly confronted that they might be wrong in what they were doing. So it's definitely something we are very keen to see if we can build in, but at the moment has a very strong reaction from the players.
Well, look, I think the problem is, and it's like, it's just, you find the same thing in video games, like in something like, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, the Star Wars game, where you can choose to do things that push you towards the light side or the dark side of the Force.
Yeah.
And there's lots of games that have similar things, like...
Bioshock. The first Bioshock has a very clear, you can kill the little adorable girls, or you can rescue the little adorable girls, but you get rewarded for killing them.
But you get, you know, you get, it's the problem with those things is the choice is not very interesting. Like, it's a, here's a very black and white choice. Do you do what
it was
is
literally
clearly
a game called Black and White that was entirely based around making those choices.
And those kind of choices are dull. You know, I do workshops for kids where I teach them to write choose your own adventure stories. And the thing that I teach them is that both choices, both options that someone has when they have a choice, have to be interesting. They have to have an element of this could work and be great, but also an element of, but it could also go wrong and be bad. And both choices have to have both of those aspects. And if you make it like, do you want to be good or do you want to be evil? That's a boring choice. If you like it, do you want to do this thing which could be good or bad? Or do you want to do this thing which could be good or bad? That's a more interesting choice. And it's hard to build an... You know, that's an ethically interesting choice, and it's a narratively interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also hard to do without giving people information. And the other thing is,
The little old lady owns, it is her rightful property, but she's a Nazi.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, because then players have to ask themselves, do I think of Nazis as people?
Yeah,
with great. All the rights and responsibilities thereof, or do I think of them as monsters?
Then so you do get to, you question. Have to build in... the more you make the system work in a way that makes it back and forth, you have to build in more and more information into the system that players have to find in maybe 5 minutes to make that quick choice.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that's the other thing too, is that you're playing in the bank for an hour, you're stealing stuff for an hour, you're under a lot of pressure because there's like a security guard who might notice you, you've got only so much time, and you might set off alarms.
That is definitely the thing we've noticed. You're under so much pressure.
Yeah.
Do you learn about the people who work at the bank?
Yeah, you do.
The very common thing that we're getting from... Because 60 minutes is not a lot of time to go through everything... By design, is not a lot of time to go through everything in a two-story bank. A lot of players who are playing for the first time are going up there and just doing the stealing things route. And then while they do so, are occasionally stumbling across little tidbits of information about these people and then coming out and saying, I really want to learn more about these people. And our response to that is, well, all that information is in there. But the game promotes players making a conscious choice to learn yeah. those things.
Well, at the moment, it is a game. It's about you know, stealing stuff from the bank. But yeah, that stuff is there definitely. And each you know, person in the bank has got a very distinct personality. They've got a backstory. They're played by particular actors, even though they're not there.
Yesterday, we started shooting a web series with the actors who are playing the criminals, so that there will be the ability for people to watch a little web series of kind of the office-style life in the bank, which will also then give them little clues and hints of how they can interact with the bank when they're there at night.
Great.
Later.
Because it's set, even if I come at 9:30 in the morning, it's set at night.
Yeah, we've blacked out all the windows in the bank so that, yeah, whenever you come in, it's dark, you've got torches, you can sort of find your way around. But it's you know, for safety reasons and also for ambience reasons, it's lit in that sort of Hollywood darkness. So there's just a little bit of blue light, which makes it creepy and fun.
And lets people vaguely see what they're doing to start off with.
Yeah, they won't bump into all the furniture, which is good. Yeah.
Great.
And the stairs are well lit.
Yeah. Can we go through an example of a heist of one element without one where you can just explain a little bit of what might happen, and you can change some details if you want to confuse people. Actually, go and do it.
I think we can do that. Yeah. So, well, we can certainly describe what happens when you first arrive.
Yeah. So when you like start up, you get there, the door opens, and you're greeted by usually either myself or Ben, already in character. As one of the kind of intermediaries with your employer, the person who's kind of brought you in to do this big job.
Mm-hmm.
You're given a basic safety briefing and then given a walkie-talkie and loaded in to the bank. It starts off with what I describe as a very basic tutorial mission, where you essentially do the job that the employer hired you to do, which is get a particular item from the bank, and your intermediary kind of chats you through that. Very simply, and really does talk you through it and sets up that relationship back and forth. So it is like the video game of like press up to move forward. It's if you want to find keys, try looking in these kind of spaces. And then from then on, the remaining time they've got after that mission is the time where they can free roam
mm-hmm.
and try get into the variety of different safes, vaults, and locked situations. And get the best that they can in that remaining time while continuing that back and forth with the person outside who is their kind of eyes and ears and kind of technical support outside of the bank.
So it is very much, I mean, it's like Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead Redemption or any of those sort of open world games, Fallout, you know, where you go out and there's a story and there's things going on, but you can really go in any direction you want and you can spend your whole time on the computer playing Minesweeper.
Yeah, if you want to.
Coming soon.
I think I brought up Fallout more than any other game while we were designing it because of that open world element of it. It just lets you... and we actually learned really quickly that you couldn't do that to the extent that they do in video games because we accidentally have limitations because the real world has much more things than video games do. For example, in a video game, if you go to a bookshelf and try to take out a book and the game doesn't want you to take out a book, you physically can't.
Yeah.
However, if you go to a bookshelf full of documents in a bank that's in the real world, you can probably take that document folder out of that bookshelf, but we can't fill 300 document folders with, with the real documents.
Well, we can, but we could, it would take a long time.
So what did you do?
We filled them all with blank paper, so they became game walls. We found that has worked quite well in that people will open that and go, cool, that's not.
And there's nothing in here, I need to worry about.
Just put it straight back, and then they all look pretty much exactly the same, so they're able to look at that and say, none of the documents folders that look exactly like that are part of it. And then we sealed some things shut.
Wouldn't waste their time looking through. Because there's like, for example, part of the set dressing is we've got a bunch of those sort of document archive boxes.
Yeah.
And we don't want people to waste their time looking through them all because they're just set dressing. So we sealed them shut and we let you know explicitly when you come to play the game.
I think the phrasing we use is if anything is sealed, not locked, it's a part of a game wall, not part of a puzzle.
Yeah, okay, great.
Just so there's some boundaries.
But you have, I mean, you mentioned someone picked up a safe and walked out with it. Yeah. And Ben, you were saying that someone tried to rip something off, or did succeed in ripping something off the wall.
Someone managed to come out with, in their loot bag, one of the bits of one of the laser tripwire alarms. Like, they managed to kick that off. It was securely glued to the wall.
I like to believe that they accidentally kicked it off the wall. I don't want to believe that someone actively ripped a glued thing off a wall, but
and then presented it to you.
That team like were troublemakers.
Like a cat with a dead rat. Look, I have this gift for you. What is that? What have you done? No, love me. Love me. They were trouble. They came in costume, Ben, you said. Yeah,
they did, yeah.
And anyone who arrives at anything in costume is not to be trusted, as far as I'm concerned.
We're quite enjoying the costumes, actually.
You have a lot of costumes?
Not a lot. We've had about four teams come dressed up. So we had that team...
And they were probably the most dressed up.
Yeah. I don't want to single them out because they listen to this, but they had a lot of fun. When I say they were troublemakers, I mean they really like messed the place up. Like they tipped everything up looking in things and stuff. And, you know,
and as
fine.
A result, got caught.
They did get
like,
caught.
So.
Yeah, but they came dressed as the Beagle Boys from DuckTales. So they had they bought all these red T-shirts from like Kmart, and they bought white bits of paper, and they'd written their birthdays on them as serial numbers, and then like put a black gaffer tape around them, and then they wore flat caps, and they used face paint to paint on little domino masks and a little beagle nose. It was adorable.
It was great.
It was really cute. And we had another team come all dressed in black, who also borrowed a friend's Mini. And drove to the bank in the Mini.
Great.
And which, if I guess if your listeners don't know, is a reference to the Italian job. We had a couple other teams come.
We had a team come in full suits who looked very, very
sort
smart.
Of Reservoir Dogs kind of thing. Yeah.
But then also had bought a bunch of like comic book cartoon masks. So we're like in these very smart suits wearing a Minion mask.
Great.
Really confusing back and forth.
No, that's like, obviously it goes Point Break.
Yes.
Dead President's Five. That's great, yeah.
And we did also have a team. Some of my friends actually came in a team. And they named their team Team Yoink. And they printed up all these little slips of paper with their team logo on it that just said Yoink. And they...
It's still everywhere.
They left them everywhere. All over the bank. Like, they left them in drawers, in safes. When they came out of the bank, one of them shook my hand and palmed me one. It was hilarious. And we still find them. It was great.
So let's talk controversy. The huge, definitely not manufactured controversy about this game.
Definitely a story that totally exists.
Totally exists in the real world.
Made perfect sense to happen.
Yep. Okay, so I brought it up here. It was from The Age, the 9th of May, so...
I haven't read this article, by the way. I've very actively avoided reading it.
I won't read you the whole article, but I'll read you the best bits.
I've heard a lot of the best bits.
So I'll respond to this.
The headline is, Bank Heist Roleplay Could Harm Real Victims, Says Support Group. There is an amazing photograph of you, Ben, in the blue lit room. You look like you're holding a torch in your hand, or it could be a gun. I'm probably, if I was an American cop, I would shoot you just to be sure, because I can't tell what you're holding.
It's definitely two torches, one in each hand.
Yep. Yeah. And it says, a crime victims group is angry at a new council have backed you, role play business in which participants pretend to rob a bank. Then it talks about, it basically explains what it is. It says that the Darabin City Council, which is the local council, have contributed $600 to the business and helped find the venue for you. And then you've got our Crime Victim Support Association president, Noel McManara, says just the thought of small-time criminals could traumatize real-life bank robbery victims. And then he says, I would suggest to those, this is you, to those running this money-making scheme at the expense of victims of horrific crimes of violence to do something worthwhile. Run an ice cream parlor or the like, or get a real job. Now, you guys are artists. You've been told to get a real job before.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to get the Ben McKenzie response. And Ben is... For those who haven't already figured out, the nicest man alive. But you're shaking your head. What is your actual response to this?
Well, look, my actual response, first of all, I feel kind of bad for Noel. He comes off sounding very unreasonable in this article. And you got to understand where he's coming from. His family members have been victims of violent crimes. He's running this little... and I don't say little to belittle it. I mean that he's running it kind of out of his own pocket. This is not a professional organization. It's like a peer group, support group kind of deal, where he's trying to help other people who feel like they've been mistreated by the justice system, you know? So he's very sincere. And I get the feeling that, and I don't know what happened, but it feels like someone went to him, possibly the journalist who wrote this article, and said, these guys are robbing banks for fun and they're getting money out of it. How do you feel about that? And he's like, that sounds awful, you know, which is, I understand his response. But we've, you know, what we're doing is we're making a fantasy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone who's played the game, and look, some people might have objections to the game even as we've created it, and fair enough. I mean, if you don't like it, that's okay. That's fine. But I feel very comfortable and confident in our decisions in the making of the game, in that we've not done anything unethical or immoral or traumatizing to people who have experienced violent crime, because you don't experience any violent crime in this game. You barely even experience any crime. it's more sneaking around. And yeah, you do take things that don't belong to you, but
you do give them back at the end, though.
You have to give them back to us. Yeah, that you're not really stealing anything. And that's the whole point. It's like a roller coaster or a scary film. You are doing something wrong or that feels dangerous and wrong, but you know that actually you're not doing anything wrong and you know that you're safe. That's the whole point of it as a game.
Were you aware there's a couple of people who have accused of you guys of creating the uproar yourself as an elaborate PR stunt?
Oh, yeah. No, I did
not.
I saw that on, I think, Reddit.
I was on Reddit, so it's like, it's not exactly
that's
a
amazing.
Real
person.
Which is interesting.
They did use the term PR firm. I like the idea that you have a...
Could I just, for the record, point out again that we are a small arts organization?
Yeah, like, yeah. No, you all have other jobs and do other things as well as this. Yeah, it was written by the organization's PR as a way to get some free publicity, and the Age just gave it to them. Very
this
clever.
Is my favorite thing of today.
You didn't know about this, did you?
No, not at all. This is amazing.
You have hired a PR. I mean, anytime anyone now gets PR, there's anything in the media. Our immediate reaction is, this story is not true. Someone is beating up something because nothing interesting ever happens in the real world.
Yeah.
So we have to, every story is created.
Well, you know what? If we didn't do that, I should say, but if I wouldn't blame someone who did in a way. Like, I think I would not feel good about someone doing this as a publicity stunt because, you know, Noel McNamara did not have a good time interacting with this story, I am sure. Someone came to him and said, someone is doing something about violent crime for fun, and he would not... That's something that's going to upset him. If, as he suggests in the article, just hearing about it could cause harm to some people who've been traumatized by violent crime, then someone going to him and telling him about this is not an okay thing to do, right? That's I don't feel good about that. But, you know, if somebody wanted to get into the paper from an arts perspective now, like so many of the papers in Australia have just fired all of their arts journalists.
Yeah.
They don't have any reviewers on staff. Like you almost wouldn't blame someone for doing a PR stunt like this.
I'm bored with that.
So I can see why someone would do that in a climate where you work really hard to make something for people to enjoy themselves and have an experience that's a bit different. Nobody's going to write about it or to pay any attention to it unless they can go, what's the angle? Can we make this controversial? How can we make a clickbait headline that will make people click on it because like someone's done something wrong?
That's the word I've been waiting to turn up for the last 7 minutes has been clickbait.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And look, to be honest, the most clickbaity thing about that Age article was the headline.
And everything else.
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, but you like read the first two paragraphs and you're like, oh, this is going to go somewhere bad. And then the rest of it is just me going, no, it's not really like that. It's okay, actually. And it's all turned out very well for us, but we were not in charge of any of that, and we had no way of knowing that that would be the case. And I was most nervous talking to A Current Affair because, you know, you don't feel like you can trust those guys, right?
Yeah, A Current Affair have always been, as far as dodgy Australian tabloid shows, they've always been like, we want some outrage, but they want real outrage. You know, they don't care if it's outrage about something dumb or wrong, but they're less likely to manufacture a story out of nothing. In the old Today Tonight days, that's when you got some proper bullshit.
those halcyon days.
Halcyon days, yes. Okay, so The Age, obviously a struggling, A Current Affair, you know, didn't get their story. It seems like Noel McNamara didn't have a great time. It seems like you are the only people who really seem to be profiting from this outrage.
That's true. Uh-huh. It is true. And look, again, we didn't know how this was going to go. But it has
your
all...
publicity stunt, or the sorry, I'm just messing.
Just to be clear, we did not manufacture a publicity stunt.
Absolutely. Do you know every time you deny it, it makes the people who listen to this go like a little bit more. Maybe they did.
The way I've always said it to the people that have talked to me about it the last couple of days is, it's great that we have gotten the exposure that this has gotten us, and that it has come across in a way that is So that actually does paint us in quite a nice and positive light. That's great. Mm. But I personally don't support us being a part of the circus that surrounded this.
No.
And was not happy with, regardless of how positive it spun us, no piece of media that has turned up about this has made me happy for myself as part of Small Time Criminals or for Small Time Criminals in general.
No.
It just was a thing that happened that luckily came across as quite positive.
Yeah, and look,
that's good. I almost believe that. That was much
more... I'm an actor.
You're an actor, yeah. Ben's just a voice guy. He doesn't have the chops that you've got.
I felt kind of compelled to be part of these things. I mean, and how it started was that Age contacted us saying, we don't know if this is a story or not. And they didn't contact us saying, some guys complained about you, we don't know if this is a story or not. They just contacted us, presumably because we sent out a media release to say, yeah, we're doing this thing. And so we don't know if this is a story or not, and called me up and just asked me, what is this? Why is this a story? And I'm like, well, this is what we do. And they weren't really interested until they found out how many people had already played it. And then that seemed to make them go, oh, okay.
It's an actual thing.
I think the perfect example of how this could not possibly be a PR stunt that we conceived is that Ben is now a Pop-Up Playground's media liaison officer in response to this happening. There wasn't even like a thought about PR until suddenly we were thrown into the middle of it. And now Ben is doing a wonderful job handling it all. We're building it as we go.
Well, I do want to address one thing, though, which is I'm slightly worried that I don't want Noel McNamara, for example, to suffer a backlash from this.
So it sounds like all of my rage should then be directed towards the fictional bank of
small-time criminals. They're awful people.
Just come and spend my money and take it all out on Eureka people. Futures, yeah. And they can take my rage.
Yeah, and they don't exist, so you can be as angry at them as you want.
You guys are the worst. If people have fallen...
Sorry that we're so mellow about this.
No, it's fine. I'm just messing with it. If people have fallen for your slick marketing campaign and your elaborate publicity stunts and the elaborate web of deception that you spun here today, how do we find out more?
You can go to our website, smalltimecriminals.com. You can find out lots of information about the game there. There's a couple of little videos, and you can book in for a session there if you want to.
Yeah, and it's in my neighborhood. Are you in Preston?
We're in Preston, yeah.
This is People's Democratic Republic of Preston. And then afterwards you can go to Hard Rubbish, which is the delightful bar cafe across the road, and have a toasty.
Yeah. No, we love Hard Rubbish.
And in fact, they are hopefully soon... We currently open Small Time Criminals Thursday to Sunday. And we tend to find that no one has anywhere to go on Thursday when we're open if they come along. The guys are maybe opening Thursday soon as well. So we'll have a lot of people going back and forth between the two of us soon, hopefully.
Bringing the love to Preston.
We do our best.
That's the hope.
Less crime, more pretend crime.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.